Yes, I am still here. Hopefully and gladly you are as well. Episode 179, Parish of the Patriots. We have gathered up the congregation once again, and I'm glad to be here. I'm excited that y'all have tuned in, and hopefully we'll have a great discussion once again this week. If for some reason it's your first time tuning in, you're in for a treat. Well, you're also in for some rambling, no doubt, but you're in for a treat all in all. We have great discussion here. We do have a Christian-specific segment. That's roughly the halfway point of the show, and stay tuned for that. I think you'll enjoy it. It's nothing like a boring church service or something. We do just, we try to really bear down and talk about things from a Christian perspective. Sometimes just general topic. Usually it's about how we walk our faith, or walk through this life rather, in our faith, and try to keep our faith, and really just, you know, try to sustain ourselves and keep ourselves, you know, motivated. It's not the normal, you know, modern church nonsense. It's just motivational speaking about, you know, Jesus loves you and he's going to buy you a new house if you send me money. It's not all that. It is about understanding our role, understanding that, you know, Jesus nowhere in there promised us it's going to be easy. He told us, if they did these things to me, they're going to do them to you. And if you read through and see what they did to him, definitely wasn't all fun and games. The show, I always get this out of the way. There's no paywall. You might find that discouraging. You might think there's better content somewhere. Click like and subscribe. In other words, come back here at Radio Albany next Tuesday. Show will be up. Check it out. But there is nothing behind a paywall, no ads. I just passed this offering plate around. I asked that you put a little something in the plate, you know. Pretend like people are watching you, like you're in a regular church or something. People are watching to see if you put anything in the plate. I'm not asking you to give me your life savings, just anything. Every little bit helps. Every little bit is much appreciated. If you want to do that, that's down. Just scroll down and you'll see I've got a P.O. box down there. We have snail mail. Got a Bitcoin address, got Monero address, got email down there, drop your notes. Got, if you've got a weirdo cryptocurrency, you know, just drop me an email. I can probably get you an address for that. I'd be happy to do that. And it's always good to hear from all of y'all. With that having been said, let us then start partaking in the listener supporter mailbag. This is one of my favorite parts, by the way, simply because this is part of the show where I don't have to think up things to talk about. I just see what y'all are talking about. Dear Grandpa Dan, hope this finds you well. I love the shows. Keep up the good work. My prayers are with you. That's from Debbie, and it is very much appreciated. We're just trucking on. I got to go next month, do the consultation. I suspect sometime next month I'm going to get cut on again, cut a part of my kidney out. Really looking forward to that. Not. So your prayers are much appreciated. Yes. And we're going to keep on keeping on. You know, I mean, like, if I at all can, like if I get my kidney cut out, part of my kidney cut off on a Wednesday, like if I'm able to sit down on Saturday as I'm doing this week and record the show, we're going to keep on going with the show. GPD, still enjoy every show. Keep up God's great work. That's from Mr. T. Well, yeah, like I said, that's what we be do, man. Let's see here. Jackie, support received from Jackie. No real note in here, but did want to let you know we got it. Hope all is going well for you, Jackie, as well. And finally, dear Grandpa Dan, and let's see here. I appreciate what you do and your sense of humor in these times. Hope you don't get hit with the rolling blackouts that started in part of Texas. Here we are looking at fighting Russia, China, and the U.S. and EU. We are struggling to even keep the lights on. It's like no one is thinking, hey, if we can't even keep the lights on at home, maybe we're not in good shape to fight the rest of the planet. Anyway, pray for your health and hope you're doing okay. Your brother in Christ, Mike, very much appreciated. And obviously, there was a first part here, prayer sent there. I'm not reading that part. That's personal stuff for the listener. But just to let you know, yes, I do. I do read all of it. Y'all know that. So, yeah. No rolling blackouts for me. I'm lucky because I believe the leg of the power that I'm on is actually feeding like natural gas wells. So like I'm at the back of the list for rolling blackouts. Like when they had that really, really bad winter and like all people wound up without power for like 2 or 3 days and it was like below zero, which was really weird for here. We're supposed to forget that, by the way. This is global warming now. Because it never gets hot in Texas in the summer. I never had, my power never went off. And it's because I'm on a leg that feeds natural gas wells, and they have to keep that going to fire the power plants, because you can't rolling blackout your own fuel supply unless you've got the same mindset as the EU, as Germany. We're going to put sanctions on Russia, even though we have to have their gas to power our country. You see, it would be that mindset. They would have to, if they cut off my electricity, they cut off the electricity that's running the gas wells, which feed the power plant, which is going to make the power plants able to put out even less electricity. Doesn't make any sense. Again, unless the U.S. is telling you to impose sanction and essentially kill yourself. It's funny, because the whole sanction thing is like the U.S. is telling Germany and Europe, you know, just go kill yourselves. And they're like, okay, we'll go do it. And it's funny. It's funny watching them get bent out of shape, you know, because like Russia, see, because Putin ain't like me. And there's a reason. We're all given our role in life. I wasn't given the role to be the head of Russia right now. You know, I given the role just to host these shows. Just as important. No. But see, if I was Putin, I would have done shut that shit off. I would. I've been like, okay, y'all back off this sanction deal or I'm cutting you off. And they'd be like, no, you wouldn't. I'd be out there personally. I'd have the TV channels out there with the cameras, and I'd be out there personally turning the valve with like the smug peppy face. And over there would be like Germany and the rest of Europe, you know, with like, you know, the tear coming down angry Wojak face. And I just smug turning off the gas valve. Just Russia's telegraph. They like cut the gas back. They're like, well, we're doing maintenance and we're cutting the gas back. Oh, we're waiting on this part. We can't get it because y'all doing sanctions. So cutting the gas back a little further. It's like they're giving them a chance. They are. They're giving them a chance to come to their senses and go, you know, you already got bad inflation. Winter is going to get here eventually. Regardless of what Greta Thunberg says, winter's coming and it's going to get cold. Maybe hot right now. Oh, the climate is changing. It's going to get hot. It's going to get cold. It's going to get hot in the summer. It's going to get cold in the winter. I would just shut the gas off. I can't imagine sending the gas when they're putting all these sanctions and purposely, openly bragging about how they're trying to destroy your economy and bring you down. See, I ain't that diplomatic. I'd be like, okay, tit for tat. Here we go. It's on, man. We're going to throw it down. I just cut your stuff off. You sanction, you seizing my assets that I trusted to put in your banks. No problem. We're going to keep our gas. It's ours anyway. Oh, what's that? You want to be paid back then because there was a contract? Well, just take it off of what you stole out of our bank accounts, out of our overseas holdings. How about that? You can seize somebody else's yacht and you can pay for the contracts that way. We'll just write that off the books. We'll settle up. See, I ain't nice. I know. He's trying to give them a chance. He's trying to give these idiots a chance. And ain't nobody. He's thinking, somebody, somewhere in one of these European countries is going to say enough's enough. And they're going to tell the U.S. to go stuff it. Something watching these countries be so subservient. It's crazy. You know? I mean, it's just so crazy. There's just, I'm going to destroy my own country, my own people, my own economy. Because the U.S. says so. Because, I mean, really, Amelia, Germany, yeah, it's an occupied country. I get that. It's like Japan. They're an occupied country. Those military bases aren't there for show. You know, and I get that. They're liable to assassinate you and all of this. But still, because at the end of the day, if Germany stood up, if Germany had a real leader and they stood up and said, yeah, we're not doing this. Sorry, U.S. We don't give a shit about Ukraine. We're not going to destroy our economy over this basically border dispute over NATO. We're not going to do it. In fact, we'll just leave NATO. The U.S. ain't going to do nothing. Oh, I mean, they might have you assassinated or whatever. But if you had an actual, the people behind you in a movement with some momentum, which you would easily start by actually growing a backbone and standing up and saying, no, we're not going to do that. They could kill you off, but it probably isn't going to stop the momentum of that. I mean, but they won't. They won't, even to the detriment. Even, I mean, they're probably going to get taken down. I mean, at some point in time, when people's lives get hard enough, this inflation and all of this get to the point where people can't buy food, it's going to bring their government down. Of course, the U.S. figures they'll just install another subservient puppet government. But that may or may not happen. I mean, you have to, it's at this some point, you just got to ask, what's even the goal here? You know, I mean, it's easy to understand. I mean, it's simple enough, I think, to understand what the original goal was. They thought, you know, they'd bait Russia into this thing, bog them down into this military conflict, and then put these sanctions down and destroy Russia's economy. That was obviously, I mean, the goal was pretty clear there. They'd collapse the Russian economy with the sanctions. There would be unrest at home because people's standard of living would plummet. And because there would be unrest at home, the government would be overthrown and somebody else would be put in there who would be pro-West, pro-U.S., in order to get the sanctions lifted. But none of that worked. I mean, at first, the ruble plummeted and everybody's like, see, it's working. Then it started going back up. And shills were like, dead cat bounce. That's just a dead cat bounce. I saw that post all over the internet. Yeah, but the ruble's going back up, dead cat bounce. And it's just like they all went to the same training course, dead cat bounce, and then it just kept going up. And then all of a sudden they had to shut up with that stupid line about dead cat bounce. Now their economy's doing great, and yet the people demanding this don't have another card to play, apparently. We're going to put more sanctions, but it hasn't worked. I mean, you've basically thrown everything out that you got. You know, you've thrown everything at them. It's like, I don't remember who it was. I think it was one of the early U.S. presidents, and it slips my mind right now, and I'm too lazy to go look it up. He got mad, and they went and had a duel. Him and this other guy had a heated deal that got to the point that they went out to have a duel. And they both whipped out their flintlocks, and the first guy fired, the other guy fired first and missed. And the ultimate victor of the duel just kept walking closer and says, stand your ground, man. You had to stand there and let him walk up and shoot you in the head because of honor. You could just take off running. It's like that. This hasn't worked. And now Russia is metaphorically walking forward, going, stand your ground, man, while I shoot you in the head. Only these people are shooting themselves in the head. It didn't work. But I guess they don't have anything else. They don't know what else to try. They just can't accept that it didn't work. Instead of backing up and going, you know, like the rest of us would do, you try something, it doesn't work, you'd be like, huh, well, that didn't work. We better back up and think of something else. They're not. They just keep doing the same thing. They're not smart enough to think of something else. So they just keep doubling down. We'll send more weapons to Ukraine. You know, Russia's like, well, we blew up some more of those weapons. Our manufacturers don't care. They're going to get paid. Regardless, in fact, that's good news for them. This is how corrupt the whole system is. I wouldn't even be surprised if, like, the arms manufacturing people had, like, guys that go, like, they slip around through channels and tell the Russians where the shit is in Ukraine so they can blow it up. Because then they're just going to have to buy more to send. Oh, you know, they blew up all these missile launchers. Well, just going to have to buy more. I wouldn't be surprised. The system's that corrupt. Wouldn't shock me in the least. And what items aren't getting blowed up, they're being sold on the black market. They're going to turn up later. They're going to turn up in all kinds of places we probably don't expect. Why? Because there's no one left. You can send all the weapons you want to. But they don't have any people left. They've all been shot. They've all been blown up. I mean, not literally all of them, but you get the point. They don't really have an army anymore. They just keep dragging this on. They're going to fight to the last Ukrainian. Saw an article just the other day. You know, Zelensky once again is like, we're not going to do peace negotiations till basically we've conquered Russia. Well, that's not realistic. You know, I mean, really, that's not realistic. That's like, you've already got your ass kicked and you're going around telling people, you know, well, yeah, my face is all messed up, but I'm going to tell you what, that guy's got one sore hand. I'm winning. Yes. Those guys in the government, Zelensky and all the rest of his crews, they're pocketing this money. They're probably getting kickbacks on the stuff that's getting sold on the black market. We all know what's going to happen. You know, eventually when this wraps up, regardless of the outcome, that guy's going to do just like the guy that was the president in Afghanistan when the Taliban took over. Eventually, Zelensky's going to take his suitcases full of American money, get on a plane, and fly over to Tel Aviv, and that'll be it. It's just a question of how wrecked is the Ukraine going to be when it's done. Talking about how they don't have any other plans. I mean, I think their plan was pretty obvious. As I said, this was going to collapse Russia. Their government would get overthrown. Then they could turn and deal with China. Of course, plan A did not work. And instead of adjusting and coming up with a different plan, they're just going on with plan B now with China as though plan A worked. They're going ahead and escalating now with China as though everything worked flawlessly. The Russian government is teetering on or has already collapsed. It's going to be replaced with a Western puppet government. Russia's demoralized. Their military's ruined. This, you know, their budget's destroyed. Their economy's in shambles. And now we can move on to China. Only none of those other things, which were the prerequisite to happen. You have to do this before you could do that. That didn't happen, but they're moving on to the China plan now. It's literally suicidal. They're moving on to the China plan. Said this before, but it never ceases to amaze me. Because everybody, whether they have high authority in government or they have a fancy government title or whether they're just somebody you work with, people in your life, people always project their own selves on you. They project themselves onto other people. And by that, I mean, a liar will always assume you're lying to him. A thief always assumes somebody's trying to steal from him all the time because they think everyone else thinks like them. And you can see this demonstrated with the U.S. government, with these government people. They sit there and say, we're going to do this. We're going to do that. You know, we're going to do this with Taiwan. And China's like, no, you better not. You know, it's just like the Ukraine thing. We saw it play out in the Ukraine. They didn't learn that lesson. Russia's like, you better not. Yeah, we're just even going to make Ukraine a part of NATO, and we may just go ahead and give them nuclear weapons. Russia's like, you better not. Well, we'll do it anyway. What are you going to do? Oh, no, look. The Soyjak's pointing. Oh, you can't just invade Ukraine. And now they're doing the same thing with Taiwan. Oh, we're going to ship $100 million worth of weapons, parts, blah, 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 to Taiwan. And China's like, you better not. You can't do anything. They're so stupid. They won't learn because they're full of shit, because they lie to everybody all the time. They're constantly just bluffing and saying stuff that's a bluff. They lie. They assume that's what everybody else is doing. They can't bring themselves to say, hey, these guys may not be bluffing. If you're in a poker game and that guy is playing like, you know, he's got a hand. Yeah, he might be bluffing, but he may also have a full house and you sitting there with your pair of twos or some shit. And the U.S. is holding a pair of twos. I mean, it really is. The U.S. is holding a pair of twos. If I recommend catching Dr. Johnson's Orthodox Nationalist from last week on the economy, because it gets into this. The U.S. doesn't make anything per se anymore. It was act like, you know, I don't know. It's like a lot of these people are stuck in World War II thinking. Those are these carrier groups. I always laugh when people say, yeah, but the U.S. military, yeah, we got the biggest Navy. Yeah, we've got all these carrier groups. If Japan screws up and decides to attack Pearl again, we're ready this time. We're ready to fight the war in the Pacific one more time with these carrier groups. But in modern warfare, they're completely obsolete and stupid and a big money sink. Anybody with any done a reasonable amount of research understands this. They're just for show. And yeah, you can go over and, I don't know, bomb some little Middle Eastern country off your carrier deck. That's all well and good. But you're going to fight a big war with them. They're just targets. The thing, it's like, well, there's a mighty U.S. We did say what we did in World War II. I'm sure what we did in World War II, the big one. One of the things that made the U.S. formidable, you know why the U.S. economy? Because people incorrectly will say, you know, well, the U.S. economy got out of the Depression because of the war. Like the war itself magically somehow brought us out of the Depression. And you have these professional egghead economists that will say that. You'll say, war is great. Why? Because, well, see, World War II is an example. Got us out of the Great Depression because the government, why do you think that is? Well, because the government just started spending all of this money and it brought the economy out. That is not what got the U.S. out of the Great Depression. Yes, World War II did bring a boom to the U.S. economy, but not because the government spent a lot of money. It's because every other manufacturing country on the planet was bombed to smithereens. Germany was leveled. Japan was literally nuked. Okay? Every major manufacturing producing country on the planet was decimated except for the U.S. You're the only game in town. And now these countries that have been decimated, they got to rebuild. And guess what? They've got to buy it from you. So yeah, it's not a real shock that after World War II, the U.S. economy boomed. You're the only manufacturer in town. If everybody's got to have a car and you're the only car, you're the only one in town that's got a car lot, you're going to do really well. That's why all that tapered off, though, because after, you know, say 20 years at the most, you know, they basically had their stuff back up and running in Japan and Germany. And all of a sudden, the U.S. economy started going back downhill. The boom was over because you had competition again. Now, these morons that act like, oh, well, we just gin up World War II all over again. Japs better not try to burn Pearl this time, I'll tell you. There's no manufacturing to gin up. I mean, yeah, part of that boom, besides everybody, you know, that goes along with the fact that every other manufacturing country in the world have been decimated. We also had all these factories up and running and people trained and machinists and people knew what to do from the war as they were manufacturing these war things. For instance, if you're on a plant building, you know, war planes, it's easy to transition that to cargo planes and passenger planes. And you've got all the knowledge and the know-how and the tooling and the equipment and the assembly lines to do all those things. We don't have any of that now. Think that you're going to see those old documentaries about World War II and all these people on the assembly line and we're ginning out these planes. And the U.S. can't do that anymore. Just like I said, the Ukraine, we ship all the weapons we want to the Ukraine. There ain't nobody knows how to use them. There ain't nobody left. All their fighting people have been blown up. We're just sending them into a black hole. It's like that. I mean, the U.S. doesn't have the capability to manufacture the stuff anymore, and there's nobody here left that knows how to do it. Not on a scale, I'm not saying zero people, but not on a scale to fight a war, a major war. Oh, and by the way, if anybody doubts that this was all planned out, this is why we withdrew from Afghanistan. You know, I remember when the withdrawal from Afghanistan, a lot of people were scratching their heads and they're like, well, what's this about? Why now? Why all of a sudden Biden administration is saying it's time to flee Afghanistan. It's time to pull everybody out. It's time to surrender and let the Taliban have it. Well, they claimed, of course, in their infinite wisdom with the quote unquote oxymoron intelligence agencies that the current government in Kabul will hold at least 6 months and, you know, less than a week. Anyway, now in hindsight, you can look and see this is all planned. That's why they had to pull all that out of Afghanistan. They couldn't afford to do that, too. They had to get this Russia plan going. They're going to do this to Russia, then move on to China. Like I say, none of that's worked, but we're moving on to China anyway. And yeah, antagonizing two large countries that we wouldn't be able to defeat. You buy all your parts. It's like the Europeans and the gas, you know? You're sitting there putting all these sanctions saying you're going to punish and destroy Russia's economy. Hasn't worked, but you're saying that's your intended purpose. And then just the slightest hint that Russia is going to turn the gas off, which I have every right to do, honestly. And you're what? You're whining and crying saying, yo, you can't do that. You can just cut the gas off. It's the same thing. Yeah, it's like, oh, we're gonna generate this conflict with China. Of course, they build all of our parts, probably 2/3 of the parts in our I don't know, planes, boat, whatever, is made in China. They're probably gonna like get in a war. Imagine this. It sounds absurd, but I don't know if it is. If you look at what the Europeans are doing right now, imagine getting in a war with China, and then like the U.S. whining and complaining that China won't ship them the parts so that they can fix or rebuild or build more airplanes, you know, more warplanes. Like, we can't build any more of these fighter jets because the Chinese won't send us the parts. How dare they? I don't know. It sounds absurd, but I'm not sure it is. Now, as to whether the U.S. is these people are foolish enough to get off into an actual armed conflict, I think they still think they can just kind of stay out on the edges and manipulate it. But, I mean, you've got China openly telling them not to do this, or Russia calling their bluff. I mean, everybody just makes a prediction. Some people say no. I lean towards yes, for the simple fact that, you know, they're obviously not giving up on their plan. They're not going to give up on their one world government stupid plan. And they obviously are foolish to the point that they're not deterred by the fact that plan A, which was the collapse of the Russian economy and overthrowing the Putin government, didn't work. But they're going to go on with plan B, which was, you know, the next stage, which is taking on and confronting China, even though the first thing that had to be accomplished didn't happen. I don't know. I think these people are foolish enough. I am. Like I say, it's anybody's guess. When Russia first started this whole Ukraine conflict thing, I mistakenly said, you know, 10 days, 2 weeks, it's going to be over. Obviously, that wasn't the case. Because I assumed that Russia was going to go in U.S. style, you know, just shock and awe, start bombing the hell out of everybody and just invade the country. People mock that, you know, Putin calls it a special military operation, like he's doing, you know, again, that projection thing, like he's doing some sort of, you know, linguistic games, you know, like he's playing some sort of rhetoric game. You know, oh, well, technically it's not a war. It's a special military operation. But no, it is, because it's so limited. What the distinction matters here, because if it was a real invasion, if it was a real war, it would have been over in 10 days, 2 weeks. If they'd have gone in U.S. style, don't care about civilian casualties, and just start bombing the hell out of everybody and rolling their entire military force in there instead of primarily just using, you know, the breakaway republic's militias and a few of their own troops to do this, as well as air support. If it wasn't so limited in scope, it would have long been over. But anyway, predictions are what they are. But these people, you know, people say, well, yeah, but, you know, they don't want any kind of consequence for them. These people, I think they live in such a bubble that they don't think there'll ever be any consequences for them. You take somebody like John Bolton. You know, John Bolton goes around and talks about hella shit about, you know, we need a war with this country. We need a war with this country. We need to overthrow this government over there. He does that because he thinks, you know, he does that because nobody's ever punched him in his stupid mouth, his stupid big ass mustache looking mouth. You know, you run into somebody, the guys that talk the biggest amount of shit are the ones that haven't had their asses kicked because they don't think it's going to happen. You know? People like John Bolton, people like these little pencil neck geeks running around being spokespeople in Washington and coming up with this nonsense, they haven't had their asses kicked. They haven't been punched in the mouth. So they think it'll never happen to them. They used to living in a bubble. They think they can overturn all of these conflicts. They think they can sponsor these color revolutions and overthrow governments and even sit there and laugh when Muammar Gaddafi gets killed brutally in the streets and sit there and act like it has nothing to do with them. Because they think it'll never happen to them. But it can happen. And they keep bungling off. If they bungle off into a hot war, they're going to lose. I mean, there's just absolutely no way. I mean, they're going to lose. Their own studies say this. They said, you know, we'll lose. But if we take on Russia and China at the same time, we're going to lose badly. There's no way. I mean, there's no feasible workarounds. We can't come up with a strategy. If we're in a two-front with Russia and China, we will lose badly and quickly. That's why they had to come up with this step-by-step plan. You take Russia down, then you move on to China. Again, the plan hasn't worked out, but they obviously don't have like a contingency plan for this, or they haven't come up with one yet, because we're moving right on to the China stage as if everything worked out just fine. People, this is a problem with living in a bubble. There's a problem with living in a box, with being detached from reality. You know, reality will come around and slap you in the face. This is what happens. They live in a bubble. They don't problem solve. You know, I mean, if you're a regular working guy, you've been on your job and you've had problems come up that you had to figure it out. You know, well, this didn't fix this. Like if you're a mechanic and you're fixing something and you think, okay, this is the problem. So you go in and you fix that problem, only it doesn't fix it. Just imagine if you just kept doubling down, you know, like, no, that had to be it. Well, obviously it isn't because it didn't fix it. And you'll get people that will actually do that. They'll come back and take the, you know, You know, I put the, they'll come back to the parts store and be like, I put this part's bad. You sold me a defective part. And the counter guy's like, well, what are you talking about? Well, the car was doing this, that, and the other. So I replaced this part. I put this new part you sold me on here and it's doing the same thing. So this part is bad. Like it never dawns on them that, well, no, you diagnosed it wrong. It's something else. And they'll stand there and raise hell, and the counter guy wind up going in and give them another replacement part, and they'll go put that one on. This one's bad, too. This is bad, too. No, you don't. You just haven't diagnosed it correctly. It's a problem with not being, if you're a decent mechanic and you sit there and you can back up and go, well, okay, that wasn't it. It seemed like that should be it, but that wasn't it. We got back up, make a new plan, got to figure something out. We've eliminated that off the list. Now we got to do something. These people can't do that. They haven't worked a real job a day in their life. They haven't solved real problems a day in life. They've sat around in a university and they've gotten promoted by kissing ass and being related to people and being ticket takers and doing all the right things and saying all the right things and backing the right people and getting the right people to back them. They don't problem solve. They haven't faced any real problems. And these are the people running our foreign policy. These are the people coming up with these brilliant strategic ideas that everybody else is scratching their head going, what are you doing? You're moving towards an open hostile conflict with Russia. But before doing that, you're going to destroy the economies of your Western European allies. That, how is that supposed to work? Exactly. You're going to cause this domestic strife in Europe because it's coming. It's coming. You're going to cause all this domestic strife and yet you're going to fight a war. And you add up, you got all this domestic strife here in the U.S. You cannot fight a war. Going back to the whole, this nonsensical idea that, you know, somehow the U.S. is going to go back in time and refight World War II, only this time against Russia and China. It's just stupid. You had a more or less cohesive society back then. You ain't got that now. You got a society looking to at the very edge of ripping itself apart. You can bring nobody together to fight Russia and China. Everybody's mad at each other. Everybody hates each other. Everybody's, this society, it's coming apart. There's no unified front. One of the most poignant things Putin, I believe it was, came up with is calling the U.S. Empire of Lies. And that is just such an apt label. It's just so true. Everything's based online. We've got this whole nonsense going on. Of course, we have the COVID thing they're doing. They're acting like COVID destroyed the economy, not anything they did. Yeah. Right now, like I said at the opening part of the show, it's hot in summer. We have a real hot summer. Lots of fires. Really unusual drought. We got a lot of drought going on, and we got all these fires going on. And, of course, they say it's because we're destroying the planet because of climate change. Global warming, global cooling. We're supposed to forget what a couple years ago we had a record-setting cold winter here in Texas. That's why it's climate change. It's not just global warming. The Earth obviously goes through these weather cycles. You listen to patriotic history, you go back and what we consider the Middle Eastern areas back then were very fertile ground and it was just a lush place where you could grow crops and stuff. Now it's a desert. Must have been because of all the Egyptians riding Pharaoh rolling around in his Escalade is why it's now a desert, because Pharaoh was rolling around with his crew in their Escalades doing drive-bys. Earth's weather change, but they just come up with this nonsense and it always has the same solution. Give them more power, you be more poor, and give up any sort of, you know, freedom or say so in your life. After all, that's the democracy, and that's who we are. We got to get into the Christian-specific segment. Got to get into that for this week. Again, if you're new, I encourage you to stick around. If not, you know, if you just didn't want to hear it, I hope you enjoyed the first part of the show. But like I say, you're always welcome to stay if you want to. Anyway, you know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon here at the Parish of the Patriots. In the book of Matthew, chapter 10, verse 28, Jesus said, "And fear not them which kill the body, but are not able to kill the soul, but rather fear him which is able to destroy both soul and body in hell." Verse probably sounds familiar because we actually talked about this several weeks back. It's a rerun this week, folks. No, it's not a rerun, but I wanted to touch back on this a little further this week. if for no other reason, because sometimes it's really hard to come up with new material week in and week out. No, but but it is new material. We're going to talk about it in a little different context. We're going to talk about winning. We're going to talk about this verse in the context of Christ and the resurrection, the crucifixion and resurrection of Christ, and kind of just expand a little further with this verse that from the book of Matthew. Now, one of the things you'll run into pretty often with the, atheist Spurgs and those others who hate Christ, they will say, well, he can be the son of the God, of God. How can he be the son of God when he allowed himself to be executed? What kind of son of God allows that? If he was the son of God and he's son of God and he just let a bunch of these people just execute him, it just shows. I was thinking about this morning, and it just shows that, you cannot understand, and this is why it's so pointless. Like, people say, well, why don't you, you should have a debate with, so-and-so, but it's pointless. Because if you read this, if you read the Bible without a spiritual mind, or to put it another way, if you read this while focused on everything that matters is in the temporal realm, then it isn't going to make any sense to you. If everything you believe is simply what you can see, what you can understand in the temporal realm, then it does sound like nonsense. Now, as Christian believers, we live for the eternal realm. I've said this I don't know how many times, but one of our purpose here is like going to school and you're going to graduate. You're maturing in this life so that when you were born again in the spirit, you're kind of ready to go. You're ready to go forth into the eternal realm and to be productive and to be prepared for that. But if you don't have it with the spiritual, i.e. the eternal realm in mind, then none of these things would make sense. And any sort of debate, discussion, whatever, is going to go absolutely nowhere, because the non-believer is looking at these things in the context of all that matters is right here on earth. All that matters is in this temporal realm. Where the believer, this is almost irrelevant. Now, going back to what Jesus is pointing out here and how it relates to ourselves, of course, and also how it relates to Christ and the crucifixion and the resurrection. Because Christ was resurrected from the dead, he demonstrated to us that indeed his words were true. If he told us, all of this and about repentance and accepting him as your Lord and Savior and all of this, and then he was executed and that was it, we would just have to go on, well, yeah, and then he went to heaven and now, we're going to do that too. But he demonstrated it. This reflects on the fact that our faith is demonstrated by our actions. Christ demonstrated to us that, no, this is how it is. He overcame death, came back, and was resurrected, and was seen, of course, by many people, ultimately demonstrating for us that death had no hold on him. He had the power over death. And if he has the power over death, then his words are true, and we likewise, through him, also have power over death. Now, when it comes to the crucifixion and the resurrection, you have to understand, that wasn't the first thing. You have to always look at these things, kind of bigger picture here. That wasn't the first thing Satan threw at Jesus, was it? We had Satan tempting Jesus in the desert. He dangled the carrot. Bow down and worship to me and I'll give you all these kingdoms on the earth and just trying to entice him. Hey. In other words, he was trying to get Jesus to be a ticket taker. You see these people and you're like, how did that person get into this position? How did they become that rich? How did they become that powerful? But you understand that they're ticket takers. They made a deal with the devil. I'm not saying they set up some sort of weird goat head altar or something like that, but on some level or another, they surrendered their soul. Right and wrong did not matter. Morality was cast away and they gave themselves over and made a deal with the devil. Only to be, and it's always a disposable deal. And in those deals, if you're the part of that deal, you're always disposable. We talked about that here a while back. Satan doesn't care about his pawns. He hates you. This is an argument about, the state of man, and Satan and his faction hates you. But again, we've already discussed that. But they were ticket takers. You see these people and they're ticket takers. Satan tried to get Jesus to be a ticket taker. He says, man, I got a sweet deal to you. Look, I'm going to give you all of this stuff. It's always worth pointing out, by the way, that when he told Jesus, if you'll bow down and worship me, I'll give you all these kingdoms you can rule over. You can have all of this power and money. You'll be the most powerful king ever was. It's always worth noting that Jesus didn't tell him, you can't do that. Those aren't yours to give. He didn't argue that point. So Satan starts off with trying to get Jesus to be a ticket taker, right? And spent 40 days intensely. Were we given a snapshot? But more or less, I mean, it's a few verses and it says he was in the desert 40 days and then angels had to come tend to him because he was so wore down from it. It was fasting and going without for 40 days. I don't know about y'all, but I go without eating like half a day, three quarters. Like I had to go do my cancer scan the other day and, you know, you have to fast. And the thing wasn't until after 1 o'clock. And it's like, you can't have anything because they got to put you in the cancer scan or CAT scan machine thing. And so I had to go like all morning to 1 o'clock. And I'm fasting. I'm like, oh, Lord, I'm laying in the CAT scan thing, seeing visions. No, I wasn't really. I thought I was going to, though. But I'm hungry. I can't picture going 40 days. You know, it was like over a month out there. And Satan just constantly just badgering you, trying to, what about this? What about this? Trying to get you cut a deal. Make a deal. Come on. He's in a bind. He's way behind. He's willing to make a deal, Jesus. He started with that. Then came the persecution. The Pharisees and the scribes. You're not following the tradition of the elders. This too is something to understand. People fell into this a contradiction because he was always in conflict with the scribes and the Pharisees. And yet Jesus said, I've not come to overturn the law. I've come to uphold the law. And people say, well, you know, the Pharisees and the scribes were constantly pointing out things that him and his disciples were doing that were allegedly against the law. But that's not what it is. Jesus said at the time, he pointed out that, no, y'all have basically forsaken the law and replaced it with the tradition of the elders, which is a whole nother thing. And it's easy to read through these things. I'm kind of getting off from the subject matter, but it's easy to read through these things and don't understand that, you know? I mean, they were like, oh, it's against the law for them to eat something with unclean hands. They haven't done the ceremonial washing yet. Jesus points out that you've replaced the law with the tradition of the elders, which probably is what became, you know, eventually became the Talmud. But that's just my theory there. It's a pretty good theory. I'm pretty sure that's correct. But anyway, nonetheless, the tradition of the elders, they would just basically replace the law with the tradition of the elders. But anyway, back on point. Yes, we're getting back on point. So next up came the persecution. He's constantly getting hassled by the scribes and the Pharisees. Constantly, you know, looking for something to catch him in. They were constantly setting up these tricks, setting up traps. You know, from the woman accused of adultery in the act, which there apparently wasn't any other witnesses, and the man she was allegedly involved with wasn't there, but they drug her in off the street and said she did it. From that to trying to trip him up. You know, over words and are you allowed to do this? Are you allowed to do that? And oh, well, what do you say about this? So they're just constantly so they could get him, so they could accuse him, so he'd drag him before the authorities, so they could shut him down. They'd whip up a mob. He'd be in the church. He'd be in the synagogue. He'd be teaching and they'd whip up a mob, shut it down. Shut it down. What better way to shut it down than to whip up a woke mob? You know, they whip up a woke mob in the church and get him run out. They had to shut him down. They couldn't handle the doctrine he was teaching. Shut him down. Get him run out. See, there was the persecution. And he just kept on keeping on. The thing is, ultimately, of course, we know, he was eventually crucified. He was eventually taken into custody and executed. It's been some time back. I did a show on the importance of everything that was happening, everything that was transpiring during the crucifixion. It was like a legal, the whole thing there was so much more going on there as on the surface. So we probably need to revisit that sometime. You know, the entire thing to where, you know, they say, oh, yes, his blood will be, you know, where Pilate said, look, my hands are clean of this deal. Y'all just basically manipulated the situation to where now I've got to partake in this, you know, approve, sign off on this execution. But my hands are clean. And the Jews said, let his blood be on our hands and all our children. And in other words, all their descendants. It's, they took that curse upon them. The whole thing is a ceremony. The whole thing is like a legal proceeding. The ripping of the curtain. I mean, the whole thing, this whole drawn out thing, there was a whole proceeding going. They take on the guilt of the blood of Christ. And yes, they'll take that on. They accept that. This whole process, we're not going to get back into that this week, but it is an interesting thing. If you look at it and what all is going on here and what do these different things symbolize. But we're going to try to, as hard as it is, I'm going to try to stay focused this week. But he was eventually persecuted to the point they did finally get him in custody. They manipulated the situation. Pilate wanted to let him go over and over. He saw through it. He saw it was BS. He wanted to let the guy go. He gave him every opportunity to say, look, come on now. Y'all are just all bent up. This is just something to do with y'all. I don't even know what y'all even fussing about. But they wouldn't have it. And eventually, he was executed. He was crucified. Now, again, for those who are only focused on everything that matters is what's in this world. All there is this life. This can't make any sense for him to be the Son of God and allow himself to be executed. How is that winning? Here's the thing. When it got down to him having to be executed, Satan was out of cards to play. That was the last card he could throw down. I mean, that was the last desperate attempt. Remember, that ain't the first thing he tried. First, tried to be real nice. Be like, hey, look, you know, if you go along with me, worship me, I'm going to give you all this stuff if you'll just be a ticket taker. When that didn't work, then started the harassment, the name calling. He's got a demon. All the usual junk. It's just worded a little different. The name calling, the accusations, the false accusations, the constant attempts to try to trick him so that he'd say something that they could then accuse him, get him thrown in jail, discredit him, so on and so forth. But finally, none of that worked. None of it worked. So Satan had to desperately just throw the last card down, which was to have him killed. But that didn't work either. Because again, our focus is on the eternal. And Jesus then was able to demonstrate that he has power over death and was raised from the dead. I made the argument before and I stick with it. The devil did not want to crucify Jesus. Jesus literally painted him into a corner where he had no choice because of the situation. He couldn't just let him keep going. He couldn't just let him keep going around doing miracles and telling people the truth and bringing people to, he couldn't allow that. He couldn't allow that. He just eventually, he had to, that was the only card he had left to play. And once he played it, it was demonstrated that he had lost the entire game. He had lost the match. You see, even for Christ, while he was on this earth in the form of a man, while he was walking this earth, he was subject to the same thing all the rest of us are subject to. The temptation, the persecution. But ultimately, when Satan had no other cards left to play and was more or less painted into a corner and had to have Jesus executed, that was the last thing. Just kill him. Just kill him. Once he was, and then he demonstrated that he had power over death. Once he was resurrected, Satan had no cards left to play. One thing you'll read after Christ's resurrection, you know, one thing you won't read about? You will not read about, well, then the Jews came to harass Jesus after he had resurrected. You won't read about Satan came back around it. No, that was his last card. The fight was over. Jesus won. Because it was always in the end about the eternal. We're instructed as Christian believers, and we believe that it is our mission to strive to be as Christ-like as we can and to understand him while we're in this temporary realm. And yet so often we'll get accused of, or even we ourselves will fall into the trap of, you know, focusing too much on the temporary, on this short life that we get. As I said, it's funny because we undergo the same thing. People get tempted. They get persecuted. If you walk in the truth, then you're going to get tempted. You're going to get the persecution. And if you take it far enough, if you wind up, the path takes you far enough and you stick with it long enough, you could even be facing imprisonment and execution. And just like with Jesus, they'll just have to make something up. Yeah, that's just so amazing to me. You know, you look at how they finally got Jesus drugged before Pilate. Pilate saw immediately it was bullshit. It was made because they just had to make something up. They couldn't ever. They tried the whole, is it legal to pay taxes to Caesar or not? As if they were worried about that. They had to just eventually lie. If you go long enough and far enough, that can happen to you. It happened to the apostles. They got executed. You know, we walk in this life, we're going to face the same things. No servant is greater than their master. If Jesus faced these things, you're going to face these things on some level or another as well. And again, if you take it long enough, if you take the truth long enough and far enough, you could even wind up facing death over it, which means you win, which means they've played, which means Satan has played his last card. If he has to have you killed, that's it. He basically, it's like if you were sitting there playing shogi or chess or something. You're sitting there playing a game and you basically have the guy beat, and he jumps up mad and he flips the table over. If all the other stuff doesn't work and Satan has to have you killed to shut you up, to try to stop the truth, he is standing up and flipping the table over. He's admitting defeat. Yeah, you still got to die. But I mean, after that, he can't do anything. You just go on to the eternal realm, just as when Christ was resurrected. Then Satan couldn't touch him. He couldn't do anything. He had no power over him. Once he gets to the point where he can't get you tempted, he can't get you dissuaded from the persecution, he can't do any of those things, he just flips the table over. Flips the table means he's lost. Now, granted, most of us aren't going to, hopefully, I say that, you know, hopefully, I mean, you are not going to face the persecution to the point of death, but it could happen. And honestly, the main reason, sadly, the main reason we won't face it to death is because usually somebody's going to bail further back. You know, the temptation, a lot of people are going to take the ticket, you know, sell their soul to the devil. Some people, the persecution will overcome them. And they just can't deal with it anymore. It's more than they can bear. But always bear in mind that if you stick with the truth and walk in the truth long enough and far enough, it could end up escalating to the point of your own death. The point is, whether you're going to make it that far or not, we always want to be focused on the end goal and understand that this is temporary. This is temporary. I mean, if you're going through your life, And you walk in the truth and say you get persecuted to the point where they drag you up, they're going to execute you, and you're, 40 years old. And you're looking at the prospect of being executed for the sake of the name of Christ. You know, but if you didn't do that, if that didn't happen, and you live another 30 years, let me tell you, 30 years ain't nothing. It's going to be gone, and then you just die regular death, and nobody knows who you are. You know, in other words, the same end is waiting for us all. Some come earlier, for some it comes later, but the same end is coming for all of us. We get all bent up and twisted up and so afraid of death, and it's understandable. It's kind of human nature. It's in your instincts to try to stay alive and walk around being suicidal and live our lives being reckless and suicidal. But we should never be overcome by the fear of death, because Christ has victory over death. Whether we live relatively peaceful lives into our old age and then, you know, die of old age or whatever ailments have accumulated in our bodies, or whether we die for the sake of truth, whether we die for the sake of the name of Jesus and die a little earlier. We're still dead. It's still the end. When you read, like, the Apostle Paul, for instance, you know, when it was pretty clear how things were headed and where he was going to wind up, he basically talked like it was just this great honor to be killed for the sake of the gospel, for the sake of the work of Jesus. Again, for those who are only fixated that all they believe is, exists is this world, that just sounds like lunacy and nonsense. Some people will sit there, I've heard the argument made that, you know, oh, well, this was just a hustle. This was just, the whole thing was a scam by the apostles after Jesus was executed. I think the Jews say that, you know, they basically paid the guards to go hide, you know, to steal Jesus's body so they could run around and claim that he was resurrected when he wasn't really. And one of the things that just blows that out of the water, you know, oh, they were just scamming, they were just hustling, they were just trying to make some shekels. The thing that blows that out of the water is they went to death for it. Nobody's going to go to death for a hustle. Nobody's going to go and be executed, you know, just because they're trying to make a few bucks without having to work. No, nobody's going to do that. That puts the lie to that claim. Oh, Jesus wasn't really resurrected. Those guys just made that up so that they could run around and try to make a name for themselves. When it comes down to you're going to get killed over this, people back off from that real quick because the money ain't worth it. But anyway, Paul said basically it was a great honor that he was going to die in this matter for the sake of the gospel. But if he wouldn't have done that, if he just died of old age, how much longer was he going to live anyway? Now, this life is short. If you're young, you don't think it is. But as you get older, you realize it's really, really short. This life is short. So, you know, the whole threat, ultimately, even unto death, is you're going to die one way or the other. We should not have an irrational fear of death. Again, our instincts are not to walk around being suicidal. Our instincts are to, you know, you're instinctually will try to stay alive, but we shouldn't have an unreasonable fear of death, because as believers in Christ, death has no hold over us. Well, hopefully this week's discussion, hopefully you got something out of it. I think it's some food for thought. You know, something for you to ponder over as the week goes on and think about as we walk. Again, most of us aren't going to be persecuted to the point of death, but we should always be prepared for that. If that is in the back of your mind, then when the other stuff comes around, if you can set it in your mind as best as you can, that you're willing to walk the walk or walk in the path that Christ has laid before you, even if it ends up in that, then the other stuff he throws at you is going to be a little easier to take. You have that commitment in your mind, your heart. And remember, you know, the most he can do is kill you. I mean, that's it. That's the most he can do at the end of the day is kill you. But once he does, he's essentially flipping over the table and admitting that he lost. We are resurrected as Christ. We're resurrected with Christ. That victory when Christ was resurrected is ours as well. We're going to get on out of here. Like I said, hopefully you got something out of the show. I always enjoy these discussions. Hopefully you do as well. Thank you once again for those of you who have pitched a little in the plate. It really does mean a lot. And appreciate all of you for tuning in this week. And hopefully you'll be back next week for the Parish of the Patriots.